A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
in time
concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 336. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about The Children of Green Knowe. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
So we're looking at this BBC children's series from 1986. It consists of 4 25-minute episodes, an adaptation of a much-loved novel, the first of the series of Green Knowe books, novel originally from 1954, and it has a mixture of ghosts, a ghost story elements, and sort of time slip, time travel type elements, with a charming young schoolboy on an adventure in a serial from a very strong era for BBC children's dramas.
It was indeed, and perhaps appropriately enough for a show set at Christmas, it was broadcast in the run-up to the Christmas period originally, and it's, here we are just after Christmas as we record, Brian, although this will be coming out later, so it's a sort of seasonal show for us here as well.
Yes, I suppose it is.
So last time we heard about young Tolly's arrival at the mysterious house of Green Knowe, which is an old family home. He's been sent away to spend Christmas with his great-grandmother and to hear some of her fabulous stories, which, as we've said, are told to him by the fireplace or at bedtime. But as this is going on and he's learning about the house and the family, he starts to see ghosts. Other children in the house, and then sometimes he gets to go and play with them, no less, and discover a bit more about them.
Absolutely. So we get this mixture of these ghostly appearances in the present of these children, and these sort of trips back to the past, as we've been calling the time slip style, where Tolly finds himself in the 1660s with these children, often with them playing or practicing music in this sort of flower-lined arbor of the house's garden. So we sort of go back to when this very old house was maybe in its heyday.
Yes, and so far all very sort of charming and nostalgic and wonderful, you know, happy children ghosts who are playing with young Tolly and he plays with them and so forth. But as we hinted last time, there's also this mysterious curse that seems to affect particularly the men of this family, who we learn are called the Olnos, or the Dolnos, I suppose, if I give it correctly in French, which is a family dating its origins back to Norman times. And they're the ones who built the house that became Green Knowe. And so there's a little bit of mystery and sort of threat there, as well as all these pleasant, charming scenes of kids practicing music and playing.
Yes, and we get the idea of a spirit lurking in this tree that seems to threaten Tolly. And there is also the mystery of this statue of St. Christopher. So there are some ideas of different old and mysterious ghostly type things that are hanging around here.
Yes, the malign presence of Green Noah, or the Green Man, which I'm sure if you're familiar with your folklore is a sort of recurrent theme in sort of Celtic mythology, I guess.
Yes. So the Children of Green Knowe has some familiar ideas of children traveling to an old house and having supernatural experiences or fantastic adventures of some sort while they're there. And the reasons that they're going there vary, but this idea of children going away to this quite remote place and stories going from there is one that we see quite a bit. And certainly classic, one of the most well-known ones is the Chronicles of Narnia, where the children are being evacuated for their own safety because of the war.
Yes, absolutely. We've talked about that. A real classic of British literature and television.
And another classic from a fairly similar time period was Box of Delights, where in that case, it's a child being sent away from boarding school.
Yes, again, we get the boarding school experience, which I'll come back to in a moment. But if they're not being sent away from war or from school, they may be recovering from their own illness by being sent to the country. We saw that in A Traveller in Time. Or maybe it's a parent's illness that's forced them to go and spend time with a country relative, such as in the book and TV show Moondial. And of course, once they arrive at the sort of destination that has some connection to the past, they will usually, as you said, Brian, they will have some sort of fantastic or supernatural experience. Maybe they encounter the past. Maybe they encounter a strange other world. Maybe it's just a series of adventures with a slightly sort of fantastical supernatural theme to them. And all of this is sort of like Narnia, I guess. It sort of at first entrances and excites them. But there's also, of course, as with any sort of narrative, there's got to be some threat as well. So there's usually some danger or menace or mystery to be solved about these stories. And in this example, the Children of Green Knoll, we also get some other familiar tropes, particularly the not just the time slip concept, which we've talked about, but also this idea of artifacts or objects or toys or something that has sort of fallen through time into the present day. Or maybe, as you said before, Brian, actually what they've just done is that the artifact has just endured and survived the years and then gets rediscovered in the sort of present of the story.
Yes, and we have Toby's flute in this case and the captain's sword and a few toys and different things like that that have survived from these children in the 1660s up until the 20th century. Where we saw this idea used the most before was A Traveler in Time, where the main character there sees a number of articles in this old house that then going back a couple of centuries, she sees them when they were new. And in at least one case, sees who made this object that she had seen as a very old thing.
Yes, that was an interesting use of it. I remember there with Sophie, the character played by Sophie Thompson, as you say, discovering this toy and then finding the person who'd made it in the past, which was fascinating. And as you've said, we've got the flute and the sword here sort of surviving through time in the House of Green Knoll. So for young Tolly to discover.
Something else we have here that's familiar is a ghost story idea or even classic horror idea of the main character going to a very remote place and the trip there being sort of arduous, where it's either several trips on different trains or you go on a train and then in this case a boat, or sometimes it's by horseback, but that the place you're going to is so remote that you can't easily get there, that it requires traveling by several different means that separates you from the rest of the world quite strongly. That's something that we saw in things like The Woman in Black, and it's also there in Dracula. So we sort of got a version of that here.
Yes, that's right, actually. I do remember the very difficult journey of to get to Eel Marsh House in The Woman in Black. And it's similar here with Tolly's journeys by train and car and boat. Yeah, something about the hazards of a journey is interesting. And it's fascinating about these, particularly the BBC's adaptations of these classic children's stories. And the thing that struck me, you know, as we watched The Children of Green Knoll, was how often these stories seem, to a certain extent, fascinated and intrigued by the 1940s and 1950s sort of boarding school experience. often portrayed, I think, quite benignly in these shows, although I think, you know, if you read accounts of people who did go to boarding school in the 40s and 50s, it wasn't always a pleasant experience, I think, Brian.
Yes, that's right. And I wonder if some of that is because the books that are being used as the source for many of these children's programs are from that time period, are from the middle of the 20th century, and the BBC, certainly at the time we're talking about in the 1980s, also in the 70s, would tend to do quite faithful adaptations to these books and would set them either in the time period that the book was set in or the time period that the book was published, if it was done as a present day thing at the time. So things like the Narnia books and Box of Delights and The Children of Green Know as well. These are things that were published in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. And I think maybe that boarding school experience was maybe a starting off element in many of the things that were being published at the time for children.
Intriguing stuff. I mean, you know, as you say, I thought this might be a 1970s and 1980s BBC thing. When interestingly, I guess the vast majority of children watching these shows would not have gone to boarding school, of course. But we also thought about a more recent example of the boarding school experience that, you know, brings it almost bang up to date, Brian.
Yes, that must be the Harry Potter novels, yes?
Indeed, yes. You know, an arduous journey by train, or at least an intriguing and fantastical journey by train, and the boarding school experience. Something again that we've been interested and intrigued by.
Yeah, and that may be sort of carrying at the further generation, that now people who are writing books, directing films, and so on are remembering the kinds of shows we're talking about from when they were children.
Ah, that may be it actually as well, yes. These classic shows that we've mentioned from the 70s and 80s, I suppose the Chronicles of Narnia and Box of Delights lead in the field, but also the shows like this one.
Yeah, and and those books were certainly around at that time, and people were growing up with many of these books over a lot of years.
Fascinating stuff. I mean, as I say, it was one of the things that struck me about this show, and when I thought of similar shows that we'd covered in this genre from that same time period.
Yeah, interesting stuff, for sure. The Children of Green Know, the novel, has been adapted more than once. In 1966, Jack and Ori read the novel, and that was broadcast as a reading.
Of course, it would have to be on the classic Jack and Ori children's story strand on television.
Yeah, and this is the sort of thing that would be there for sure. And it was actually adapted as a radio play as well much later in 1999.
And there's been a film. In 2009, Julian Fellowes, famous for being the sort of creator and writer of Downton Abbey, wrote and directed a film adaptation of the second book in the series. So that's The Chimneys of Green Know. But it was called From Time to Time, and it starred Maggie Smith, no less, another Harry Potter connection, I guess. Maggie Smith played Mrs. Oldknow in that version, and I haven't seen it, but Brett on our Facebook page today tells me that it's really worth a watch. So that might be one to track down as well.
Yes, I may have to track that down as well. I haven't seen it.
So interesting to know about other versions, or at least other adaptations from the series.
Yes, absolutely. And I think this is now nicely bringing us to our own thoughts about this serial. So, Eamon, what did you like about The Children of Green Know?
So, I've used the word charming, I think, many a time throughout our outline and our recordings, Brian. It is a charming show from that classic era of BBC adaptations of these sort of giants of children's literature. I thought it all looked great. You know, the flooded landscapes, the train journey, and then the snowy fields around the house. The house and garden, as you say, they found a great house for it. And of course, we've mentioned the costumes. So certainly the look of it, the sound of it, great, I thought. What about yourself? What did you think of the good points of the show?
Well, I would agree with a lot of that. I think it looks beautiful. I think the period piece, and it's sort of a double period piece where you have the, we think, 1950s period that is done in a way that it's deliberately a little hard to tell when it takes place, but has that sort of mid-20th century feel to it. And then combining that with the 1660s period. And I think those period renderings were handled very well.
Okay. What about the performances we have here in the show?
I thought they were good. When you have something like this with children involved, especially in a script like this where you have one character who's very young, who is central to it, and you end up having to have a child actor carrying a lot of the show on their shoulders. And in this case, I think that worked very well. I think our lead actor playing Tolly gave us quite a good performance. I thought he was quite charismatic, and that helped this a lot.
Yes, he's terrific. Young Alec Christie as Tolly. He's sort of like, you know, he's charming, he's inquisitive, he's bright, he's cheerful, he's enjoying everything about the house and the journey and the stories. And yeah, he's having a great time of it. And him, the combination of him and Daphne Oxenford as Mrs. Oldknow, are really lovely.
Yes, they had very good chemistry, and she was very good, of course. He also, as you said, was tremendously enjoying being there. And that was really believable because you had him coming from this very drab place and having no one to connect to at boarding school when everyone else had left. And coming out here and meeting this sort of grandmother type character who's new to him, and having this old place and all of the ghosts of the children, which are all portrayed as a very positive kind of thing, his enthusiasm is really nice and it's really believable.
So that's all splendid stuff. I guess it is a fairly short show. I mean, it's only about 100 minutes in total for the four episodes. So there's not an awful lot of story to get through on this one, Brian.
That's right. I would say, actually, moving to the negative side of things here, it is a little bit slight. While it gives us a very charming atmosphere and seeing Tolly and the historical children interacting and seeing Tolly and his great-grandmother interacting, all of that is lovely, but there isn't that much that happens here, and there isn't much of a sense of threat, so it is a little bit slight.
Yes, that was my sort of problem with it as well. I mean, you know, I did enjoy the sort of old house and the time slip aspects, and the, some of the sort of ghostly appearances, but it did seem, compared to some shows that we've mentioned, such as The Chronicles of Narnia or The Box of Delights, it did seem a little bit on the sort of, as you say, there's not much to it in this one. There's not an awful lot that happens, and that's reflected in the fact that we only get four episodes, and they don't feel particularly crammed with incident and events, whereas obviously, those other two shows, in fact, you felt that the BBC were having to squeeze stuff in from the books in order to make it, you know, to try and fit, and they probably had to leave lots out. So, yes, I mean, perhaps compared to some of the big names, this is a slightly lesser one from the 1980s, but it does have a little bit of charm to it.
Yes, it's a lovely, charming piece, and it's an enjoyable one to watch. I watched one episode at a time, which I think was nice. And yeah, it is sort of a fun one.
Yes, I mean, it is quick and easy, you know, only 100 minutes, four episodes, won't take you many nights to get through it, and it's fairly cheap over here at a tenner for the DVD. So yeah, it does have some plus points, but some perhaps, you know, doesn't quite stand up to those heavyweights that we've mentioned.
So I think this brings us nicely to our recommendations. Eamon, what would you like to recommend?
Probably The Box of Delights, actually, Brian. I think that's the show to go for first. I think that's the Christmassy seasonal children's classic from the BBC in this sort of golden age of children's television to go for first. But if you remember this show from your childhood, if you've seen all those others and you're intrigued for a bit more charming adventures with this time slip ghostly aspect to it, then yes, check out the £10 DVD. But I would probably put those other shows ahead of it in the queue, Brian. What about yourself?
I am pretty much going to agree with you there. There are better shows out there, and the Christmassy feel and this mid-20th century feel, I would be leaning more towards Box of Delights and more towards The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, having that some of that feel. And in more the time slip adventure, things like Time Slip, which was from 1970, but also something that that we covered. I think those are interesting. I think this one is a fun show in that it's sort of charming and has a nice aesthetic to it and some nice things with the characters, but with the amount that actually happens in it and the minimal threat, I won't recommend this strongly. If you're looking for another thing to add to your collection and something else that's fun to take a look at with this feel, then sure. But I would be looking at some of those other shows first, and also A Traveler in Time. I would be looking at that first. So this isn't going to be a big recommendation from me.
Okay, but as ever, if you disagree with our takes, if you've read the books, if you've seen the film with Maggie Smith, then please do get in touch with us by emailing us or joining us on the Facebook group.
Absolutely. So, in summary, The Children of Green Know introduces us to a schoolboy called Toesland, who is on his own for the Christmas break at his boarding school until he discovers that he has a relative in the country, and his great-grandmother is inviting him to Green Know, this big old house, where he goes to spend Christmas with her and encounters the Children of Green Know, these ghosts from the 1660s of children that he gets to meet and play with. And he gets to travel to the 1660s briefly as well and encounter some things there and encounter these children in their own time, along with the threat which does come into it of Green Noah, and we see things resolve before he has to go back to boarding school at the end of the story.
Fantastic stuff. Well summarized, Brian. And of course, join us next time. Come back. We're joining another traveler making an arduous journey to another mysterious old house. It's Jonathan Harker visiting Castle Dracula in the BBC's 1977 adaptation of Bram Stoker's classic. The show was called Count Dracula.
And that will definitely be a fun one to talk about, a real classic of the 1970s there. So until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our Facebook group and join into the conversations there.
Or join the conversation at the Voice of Geeks Network, where we are proud members. Drop by and say hello at vognetwork.com to learn more.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's a goodbye from Eamon in England as well.